Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's have served this valley for decades, and there's a reason why that happens. Trust. You need to have great trust in your insurance agent, that they're always looking out for your interest, that they're always trying to get you the right insurance at the right price that fits your budget. Oh, and if there's a claim, they immediately become your partner in making sure that claim is handled correctly and quickly. The pros at Purdy Insurance handle it all. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Before we get to Donnie Collins from the Scranton Times-Tribune, time now for our play-by-play call of the day. It involves the former Nittany Lion lacrosse star, Chris Hogan.
Brady pulls away, gives to Deion Lewis. He tosses it back to Brady and a free swinger. He had Mitchell open. He throws it instead for Hogan to the right. Touchdown, Patriots! Two choices, and he finds Hogan for the second time.
Tom Brady takes the snap, and with one more kneel down, here we go. The New England Patriots will play one more game in this 2016-17 season. And with that one more, they are the only one, the only NFL franchise to reach the Super Bowl 9 times.
It's more than the Steelers, isn't it, Sean?
That is correct.
Wow. Huh. It's interesting. Did the suit know that?
Don't know. Does now.
Sitting at some location right now. Undisclosed. Not happy. Suit. Oh, well. It's the suit.
All right, James Frank.
So what is your evaluation of the Steelers season, Sean?
Well, they finished 11-5, and they got further along in the playoffs than they did last year. So I look at that as optimistic. So it's just going to be interesting to see who they keep, who will stay, who will go. Will Harrison come back and play yet another year because he turns 39? I'm already thinking draft, what are they going to do? I would say they need to seriously consider another edge rusher because I think Jarvis Jones could be shown the door. I mean, obviously, if he stays, he's not going to be a starter on the other side, on the opposite side of Bud Dupree, for sure. And in terms of wideouts, are they going to let Marcus Wheaton go? Do you stay with Martavis Bryant one more year? Do you give him another shot? I wonder what they're going to do with Ladarius Green. I mean, is he kind of considered damaged goods? Is he going to be really able to play again at 100% level? That's one. Just a couple questions I have for the Steelers here in the first few hours of the offseason. And other things too as a running guy. I heard Jerry Dulac, our friend of the show, Jerry Dulac, said this morning. I heard him say this. When do you now draft a running back? Do you keep D'Angelo? Do you now maybe consider third, fourth round, maybe drafting a running back? And maybe do you, if he's there, take James Conner from Pitt?
Wow. Based on that answer, your team's a mess. Wow. Surprised always, they got there.
Always more questions and answers when you don't take home the trophy.
Well, they don't have a lot of questions or questions in New England. They seem to take home the trophy a lot. Wow. I thought this was the time, and the reason I thought this was the time is I started with Bud Dupree and James Harrison. Now, when you label a key to the game,
you label the key to the game for a reason. That one of two things run through your mind. If they get great pressure on Brady, they can swing the game. If they get no pressure on him, it swings the game too. That's why you pick it as the key. They got no pressure on him at all. Zero. Zero. The suit could have stood back there and made throws. Now, I'd like to point out that the suit, all of the suit's throws would have been picked off because there's just no arm strength there, but he would have had time to do it. I understand the door's been closed all day, a lot like George Costanza. That way you think he's really, really busy and nobody wants to bother him. All right, let's bring in Donnie Collins, Grand Times Tribune. Peter King coming up on the show on Thursday as the list of the guest list just gets better and better, it seems. I think he is the gold standard nationally with his Monday morning quarterback column, among others. He will be on the show Thursday. And yes, he is a Hall of Fame voter as well. James Franklin at his year-end press conference on Saturday. What were your thoughts and quick takeaways?
Well, I mean, I was most interested in, you know, the scholarship situation and kind of getting, not even the situation, I guess, but kind of getting some insight on how they deal with it. And I think, you know, James did his normal good job of kind of explaining where they, you know, how they look at it. And you know, I think you can look at the last year's roster, predict who's coming back, you know, who's going, things like that, and see that they're very close to the scholarship limit. But, you know, they don't exactly look at it that way. There's a lot of things that could happen, and, you know, nothing needs to be set right now. They know what they have to take in the recruiting class coming up. And, you know, it was mostly like, how many more kids do you think they could take? I think that was what everybody really wanted to know from Franklin, and it stands that, you know, they could take 20-21 kids in the recruiting class and move from there. So, but that makes it a little interesting moving forward to see how they round out the recruiting class heading into February 1st.
Do you feel now with this recruiting class it'll finally give them a little bit of not only positional balance, which we've talked about before, Donnie, but maybe for the first time start to give them some class balance?
Oh yeah, and they need both. Obviously, that's the, you know, one of the things with the sanctions and the scholarship limitations that people, you know, kind of ignore sometimes, is that's something that most programs strive for. They want class balance first of all, because, you know, now they can kind of set up a system on what they're going for and how many scholarships they're going to have and the types of players they need and things like that. But also, if you look at the roster, there were some types of players that they just didn't have, and now they can go out to get a couple of them, and, you know, and they got a couple in this class, I think, already on campus, who are going to be very interesting players in the fall with Wade, Lamont Wade, the cornerback. He's a different style of cornerback than they've got, and Hamler, the receiver, I really like. He could be a return guy. He could also kind of, you know, he gives you that dimension that Pitt had with Quadri Henderson. So I think that, you know, they can now look at, you know, where are we lacking? What do we have on the roster, and what do we need on the roster, and let's go for some of those players. And I think, to a degree, they're trying to fill out the class right now with some of those players, that, you know, the style of player that they don't have.
Obviously, there'll be expectations on what's going to happen with this football team. But I felt after the Ohio State game there were expectations. How did you feel as what, you know, the younger players, the ones that will be back next year, how do you feel that they handled the expectations of the stretch run, and how can that translate into next year?
Well, I thought they handled that great. I mean, after the Ohio State game, I remember thinking, that's a good upset. Let's see where they go from here. But the players looked at it differently, and they kind of used that as, you know, as proof. They were emboldened. They thought, you know, hey, we're going to be able to kind of build from here and become a great team, not just a good team, but a great team, and they did that. So I think that, you know, these guys believe they could beat anybody, USC included. I mean, I think they thought they were the team that made the most mistakes in that game, and they were. And you know, they build on that and go out and play better next year, and that they could be a contender. And I think Franklin said that on Saturday, and I thought it was a good point that, you know, look, a lot of people look at that as that Rose Bowl is an entertaining game, and it's just a slightly disappointing end to a great finish to that season. But I think he looks at it a little differently, and the players look at it a little differently. As in, you know, hey, so we didn't win that game. There's a lot to play for next year. Right. There's a lot to prove, and if they could channel that, and this is the type of team that can. I think that these are the type of kids that can take some adversity and build off of it because they've been through it. And this is some positive adversity, I think, for them, you know, to kind of learn from and get better from. So, you know, I think they can be a better team because they lost that Rose Bowl game and because they won the Ohio State game. I don't think one of them makes them better than the other one.
How do you feel about the possibility now of an early signing period?
I personally think that when you decide you should go, you want to go somewhere. If somebody's offered you a scholarship, and you say I want to go to this school, that you should be able to sign a scholarship. So I'm for an early scholarship. I think it works for the kids who know where they want to go, and it works for the schools because now they don't have to sweat out the last couple of weeks, you know, kind of hoping that. They can shower enough attention on some kids who want some attention or whatever they want, or you know, not saying that all these kids are would decommit because they want attention. That's far from it. I mean, some of them have their heart somewhere else, and you know they can finally convince themselves of that, or their family of that, or whoever they want to convince of that. So I think they've, but one thing James says a lot that I really agree with is if you're not 100% sure, if you're 99% sure, don't commit. You know, and the early signing is for the kids who are 100% who know where they want to go and let them commit that way and be done with it. But you know, for the others, you know, I think that the process is always going to play out. And I have a feeling though that if there's an early signing period, very very few kids take it.
How do you feel about a 10th coach? That's another one that's on the table.
Yeah, I mean that one I think the more coaches you have, I mean, boy, it's like I look at it as a student to teacher ratio kind of thing. You want it to be less kids per teacher, and if at your high school or your elementary school or whatever. So why wouldn't you want the 10 full time coaches there? There's a lot of coaches to some degree right now, but I think the 10th one would help the kids. So like you were talking in the lead in, you know, they want to do some things to improve the student athlete experience. That's one of them. I think that would. I mean, another guy that you can go to academically or socially, could help you out a little bit. And that's the kind of thing. I don't know if it helps out that much on game day, but I think it helps the other 6 days of the week a lot more than people would realize.
Yeah, I agree with that. Possibility now of taking a 12-game season and spreading it out of over 14, in other words, two bye weeks. What are your thoughts on that proposal?
The two bye weeks thing. If you're trending toward health and safety of the player, the thing that I always look at with the schedule is where does the bye week fall? And Penn State's been lucky. If your bye week's right in the middle, yeah, you know, like it kind of was last year. Then that's a good spot for it. But if you have an early bye week like they had a few years ago, or an especially late one, then you're playing, you know, 7, 8, 9 games in a row, and that could become that could take a toll. So, but I think adding the second one reduces that stretch, that one big stretch where every team, you know, where every conference has that one team that's playing 8, 9. You know, games in a row, and the injuries do tend to pile up there. And I think, look, it's college football, it's college athletics. The more time off you can give to the kids, the more it benefits educational opportunities.
Agreed.
And things like that. So they should do it. That's what it's not the NFL. They should give it to these kids. So man, I don't have strong feelings about it, but I think that if I was a student athlete or one of my kids was, you know, then I would. that would want them to have that extra time.
Yeah, you'd start it a week earlier, and let's face it, it used to be college football would start its games with the kickoff classic and with the Pigskin Classic that started that weekend anyway. So it's not a huge adjustment for the fan. It's also night, you know, now heat comes into play, but it's also usually better weather for the fan. And for the player, I agree with you. I think giving the extra week is a, I mean, now that's thinking of the student athlete. I mean, the meals thing thinks of the student athlete. You know, the day off thinks of the student athlete. The stipend thinks of the student athlete. Now the next part is, how do you reconcile how you schedule this thing?
Exactly. And that's for them to determine. I don't know, I tried to very preliminarily guess, and it's not going to be easy. It's going to be difficult to make sure everybody gets their 2 weeks in the late August to early December timeframe they want to get it in. It's going to be tough. But I think the other thing that I don't believe they addressed, they have to get rid of some of these primetime games.
Oh.
If you're really doing this for the student athlete, you shouldn't be playing 4, 5, 7, or 8 o'clock games at night, you know, every season. Like Penn State had to this year. That was difficult.
And yeah, well, Donnie, I mean, it's more than that. I mean, to me, the Big Ten. I mean, I get the TV part, I get the exposure part, I got it. But does the Big Ten really need to be playing Friday night games?
They do not. And that's a great point. Who's going to watch the Friday night game? Number one, I don't think that's especially for the fans. That's a high school football night. I don't think anyone's going to be clamoring to watch Rutgers, Indiana. No offense to those two programs, I just don't think anyone's going to be clamoring to see that. That's the type of game you're getting on a Friday if you're going to let Penn State and Michigan and Ohio State say, you know, we'd prefer not to play if they choose to do that, especially a home game where you would prefer not to play it. But you know. I just think a lot of this stuff that they try to give to the student athlete, they take a little bit more back, and I think, you know, hey, look, if you're getting home from Rutgers at whatever time you guys got home at, 4 a.m. or whatever it was, 3 a.m. and that's not making much sense to me, that, you know, as a way to treat the student athlete who really, you know, should be putting more time into student than they are at.
I mean, that's. I see the Friday night thing in the first two conferences. I think to myself that don't need it are the SEC and the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. I mean, but that's just me from the outside looking in. I just don't see why those two conferences would need a Friday night game.
No, it's great for the MAC to play on Thursdays,
sure,
or whatever they're doing, because ESPN's going to broadcast the game. But ESPN's broadcasting the Big Ten games on Saturdays, so I don't see where the exposure is better.
Yeah, neither do I. I mean, I look, scheduling's complicated, TV's complicated. I got that. It's just there's just a couple of issues I see that I think need to be worked out. Donnie, always a pleasure. Appreciate it very much, and we'll talk to you soon, I hope.
Awesome. Thanks, Steve.
Donnie Collins, Scranton Times Tribune. We'll come back, expand more on those issues in a moment. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
If you're not insured with the Purdy Insurance Agency, you may not be getting the most out of your insurance coverage. Locally owned and family operated for over 90 years, the experienced team at Purdy will compare your rates and coverage among a number of nationally recognized insurers to make sure you're getting the most out of your insurance dollars. And once you join the Purdy family of customers, you'll experience service and claims handling that's second to none. Call 1-800-677-2478 to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
When you're looking for a new Ford vehicle in Central PA, there's only one dealer with four city blocks of new Fords. It's Sunbury Motors Ford. SMC is where you want to be with over 90 new F-150s priced from just $24,824. See for yourself why Sunbury Motors has sold over 40,000 trucks. Sunbury Motors Ford has over 70 new Ford SUVs in stock with 2017 Ford Escapes on sale from only $19,880. SMC has 45 new Ford cars, with Ford Fiestas starting as low as $13,975. Plus, financing
financing as low as 0% for up to 72 months on select models. You deserve to deal with the best. Sunbury Motors Ford. SMC is the dealer voted best in the Valley Reader's Choice for best car dealership,
best body shop,
and best quick service. Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. SMC, satisfying more customers since 1915.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Scheduling is difficult. I mean, there's certain things. I am for the early signing period. As you know, I've always been for the early signing period. And putting it in mid-December is fine by me. Look, there's certain people that just don't want to change their mind. They don't want to be bothered anymore. And that's a big part of it. To me, if you don't want to be bothered anymore, all right, then fine. Then don't... then you can end your recruitment there and wipe out the last 6 weeks of it. Now, it's true that the signing event is a huge event. It turns into something big every year. The way James Franklin does it, I've really enjoyed it. You know, I've been a part of it, you know, making the announcement at the podium, you know, with, you know, every year. Which has been fun. I won't be able to do it this year. I'll be in Indiana. But the... So you'll lose a little bit of that. But... I think that it's... something that I think is needed. College basketball makes it work with complete ease, really. And so that part's fine. I'm going to get into the scheduling part in a moment. Talk about that in the final half hour. Take your questions and comments on that. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Steve Engel just sent me a nice email about the Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament. They're meeting tonight about it.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
It's about time to get back to arguing on that show. Jeez. There's been more peace on that show than a snowflake festival. What the heck? Come on. Let's get back to who we are. What?
You looking at me?
You're over there laughing again. What the heck?
I was.
Huh?
I was.
Yeah. The snowflake festival. What the heck? Come on. The new definition of snowflakes. All right. Time now for the sports bozo of the day. The idiot that said the Steelers would win by 10.
You're on the board. Awesome.
And did it with such confidence.
You did. You did.
I mean, I'm talking arrogance. Hey, it's important to own it. I own it. I own it. So... Yep, really, really feel confident about that. Yeah,
I did too.
Yeah, you're a fan. I'm not my team, so I just made a pick. And you're a fan, though, who, by the way, picked against them against Kansas City earlier in the year.
That was last year.
So last year. Wow. Sounds to me like you're trying to get out of something here.
That's true. If I would have picked the Steelers though that night, if I would have picked them that night, I would still only be one game behind your brother heading into the Super Bowl. So it has come back to haunt me.
What are you, two games back?
Two now, yes.
Yeah, D doesn't realize the Super Bowl's worth 10 points. I can hear him now. See, I told you he's trying to win. He's trying to rig it.
I wonder what we'll talk about when he calls up on Friday. This will be a first time we'll be calling up. We won't be picking games.
We're picking the Pro Bowl, man.
Well, that's true. It is now back to the NFC-AFC deal.
Exactly right.
Yeah, none of this fantasy stuff. Yeah.
That's worth 20 points. Whatever he picks, I'm doing the opposite. We're gonna put all the eggs in one basket.
He texted me yesterday morning. He goes, "I just won 10 million extra bonus coins while playing poker." So he felt confident going into his games yesterday.
I go into his office when I've been there, and he's doing that. I'm like, what are you doing? Oh, well. Okay. I want to get into the scheduling thing for a little bit. First of all, scheduling is hard. It is hard. And I got that. Especially now, let's take the Big Ten. Big Ten, you have 14 schools in the Big Ten. Two divisions. It's not easy. But there's certain things I think that need to be taken into account. It's like who you are. Let's start with that. Who are you? And that's why I've been against the Friday night thing. I'm sorry, but I can't buy into this. There are two conferences that do not need Friday night football. The Big Ten and the SEC. Now, maybe an occasional Big 12 game. The Pac-12's out there with a late game. Let's see. I'm trying to think. Has the ACC played any Friday night games? They play Thursday nights. I know that. The ACC's had no problem with Thursday nights. But the Big Ten and the SEC do not need other night of the week games unless it's the opening week of the season. Now, I can go along with this, you know, with what's the next proposal, and that's doing 12 games over 14 weeks. Now, I am absolutely for that. The season would start a week earlier in August. That's no big deal. This year, the opening weekend was September 3rd. All right? September 3rd. So the earliest you could open a season, I usually do it on a Thursday night, right? So the earliest you would open a season is if Labor Day were the first. 31-30, 23. August 21st would be the earliest on a Thursday night you could open the season, right? So for the most part, you're going to be opening the season. You know, usually Labor Day is what, the 3rd, the 4th? Okay, say it's the 4th of September. 4-3-2, now you back it up a week after that. And so it's the 24th, 25th, August 26th, okay? And August 24th would be the opener. I think most people are fine with that. Number one, the weather's, it's going to be hot, so it does come into play. But you can play some night games then. I have no problem with playing night games then. I mean, no problem at all. You want to play when it's a little bit cooler at night, gets people all day to tailgate, it's still summertime. There's a lot of pluses to playing games at that time of the year. Opening weekend or the opening two weekends, including Labor Day, if you want to play a Friday night game, great. But to me, once you get past Labor Day, if you are the Big Ten or the SEC, to me, you should not be playing Friday night games. Man, you've got enough networks between Fox, Fox Sports 1, ESPN, ESPN 2, Big Ten Network. You can cover the gambit as to what you can do. The November night games. I mean, Penn State playing at Rutgers in November. 8 o'clock game. Now, I realize for Penn State, the one advantage Penn State did have on that night game was that Penn State did not have classes the next week. They did not have class because it was going into fall break. Now I understand that. But some of the night games, I mean, Penn State played three night games, correct? I mean, in the regular season, because obviously the Rose Bowl was a 5 in the afternoon Eastern time game. That was a night game here, and then spilled in the night there, and of course the Big Ten Championship game was a night game. But they played three of their last six games at night in the regular season. Ohio State, Iowa, Rutgers. I mean, that's October into November. I mean, that's something that, I mean, needs to be looked into. I know you're trying to get exposure for the conference, and Penn State playing Ohio State in prime time is a big deal. The exposure was off the charts. I mean, I got that. Then I get into the basketball part of it, which there are more games and it is more difficult. But there has to be some common sense. And again, I know it's going to happen here twice for Penn State. They're going to play 9 o'clock games in the middle of the week at the two furthest reaches of the conference. Okay, Wisconsin and Nebraska. It's no big deal for Penn State to play a 9 o'clock game at Ohio State. You're saying, well, why is it okay to play a 9 o'clock game at Ohio State but not a 9 o'clock game at Wisconsin? Well, it's pretty simple. If you play a 9 o'clock game at Ohio State, the game goes to 11 Eastern time. You're out of there a little bit after 11:30. You're at the airport by 12:30. There's a good chance you're up in the air, and then you're back down on the ground by probably a little before 1 o'clock in the morning. That's fine. You play at Wisconsin, which Penn State will tomorrow night. It is 9 o'clock start, finish around 11, maybe a little bit after. I know for us, we have a half-hour postgame. Well, during that, that's when they're doing their interviews and stuff, so they're not waiting for us. We're done at 11:30, probably pull out at 11:45. It's 25 minutes to the airport from there. Okay, so now we're past midnight Eastern time. So now it's about 12:10. You pull into the airport. You got to unload the bus. You got to load up the plane. And they've got to do some paperwork. There's a good chance that you're not off the ground until 12:45, maybe 1 o'clock in the morning. That means you're back here at 3 o'clock in the morning. Now, you're telling me, and by the way, Nebraska will be a little bit later. You're going to get back maybe 3:15, 3:20 in the morning. You're telling me you then want the student-athletes to be in their 8 o'clock class on Wednesday? Really? So, I mean, you want to schedule a 9 o'clock game, that's fine. 9 o'clock at Michigan, 9 o'clock at Ohio State, 9 o'clock at Michigan State. And I'm picking those because those are flies. Doing it at Maryland and Rutgers for Penn State are bus trips, so that's a little different ballgame, all right? So I hope you understand where I'm coming from here. But to look at now, Penn State's game at Minnesota is a weekend game, so that's not on the boards. But to play, and same thing with Iowa, that's a weekend game. That's March 5th. That's a Sunday, I think. But at Nebraska and at Wisconsin, 9 o'clock at night, when you've got to go an hour further, see, that's the part that bothers me. I don't feel like there's enough thought put into that there's far more thought on you being a television show than you are in filling a time slot than you are a student-athlete. There have been so many great advances for student-athletes. Stipend. The elimination, essentially, of two-a-days. I mean, really, two-a-days are essentially gone now. Okay. So the stipend, the elimination of two-a-days, charter flight, big, especially, the two primary sports, football, men's basketball. Others get the charter, too. Women's basketball gets the charter. Women's volleyball charters. Wrestling does not. So I know people ask, well, wrestling charter? No, they don't. They want to, but it's not done yet. So stipend, nutrition bars, elimination of two-a-days, It's better now to be a student athlete than ever. But the television component does put a strain on scheduling. It does put a strain on scheduling. So while it's an 8 o'clock game there at home, it's a 9 o'clock game here. That does put a strain on, you know, and Ohio State just did this last week. Ohio State went to Nebraska, played a 9 o'clock game on a Wednesday night. Same story. I mean, it may be a half hour less for them, but they still had to fly from Lincoln back into Columbus and got back at early in the morning. You know, what happens if you run into weather? Penn State wrestling team was coming back from Iowa. Eventually had to go to Newark yesterday and had to bus back from Newark yesterday. Now, fortunately, it's a weekend, but still, they had to bus back from Newark. Men's basketball team couldn't get into University Park Saturday. Circle around for half an hour. You know, I mean, I'm only the pilot trying to somehow get us in there. But there's no way they could, so we had to go to Pittsburgh. And they had to get vans to bring the team back up. Now, Dick Girardi, Jeff Tarman, and I rented a car and we drove back. But, you know, what if you run into that problem? I mean, we left West Lafayette Saturday after the game, all right? It was 63 degrees and sunny. Now, exactly what travel problem do you think I envision going back? None. It's 63 degrees and sunny. I'm not envisioning any weather problem. And it turned out that it was a 45-degree day in State College, which is not good. It's foggy. We couldn't get back in. So you know what you're going to run into. I mean, it's going to snow here tonight flying out. But these are things that, yeah, I think they've got to put. The TV contract is really, really important. The TV contract opens the door for so many things. You know, better facilities, better fan experience, better across the board for everything. Because you've got more money there. It pays for the nutrition bars. It pays for stipends. I mean, there's a lot of things that it does. And student-athletes make a lot of sacrifices. But I think there's got to be some common sense where, okay, maybe one time a year you got to bite the bullet and an Eastern time zone team has to play a 9 o'clock game Eastern time at a Central time zone team. But twice? You get 9 road games in the conference. 9. 2 of them have to be 9 o'clock road starts? Really? Really? It's completely different if that 9 o'clock road. There are a couple times where I have no issue with 9 o'clock road starts. Night, you know, weekend is one. I don't mind the 9 o'clock road start in the weekend. And again, for me, the professional, it doesn't matter. I'm my own contractor. I'm out there doing my own job. I choose to be there. I can handle my Wednesday any way I want. I'm a professional. I'm not required to be a class at 8 o'clock in the morning on Wednesday. Now, naturally, of course, I have a speech scheduled for 8 o'clock in the morning Wednesday, which I said yes to, but I chose to say yes to that. That was my choice. But 9 o'clock weekend start, fine, no problem, because you're coming back in the next day, Sunday. Okay? 9 o'clock when you're on term break, no problem. They're not in class. It doesn't matter. But once classes begin and you're in conference play, I think they have got to put in something where a team is only allowed to do this once and not twice. I mean, that's absurd. Penn State had 2 of its road games during term break, perfectly fine. So now you're down to 7 road games. And of the 7 road games, 29% of them are at 9 o'clock at night in the middle of the week. Really? And again, this is not me complaining about me. I don't care. I'll do the show on the road tomorrow. Fine, I'll get in the plane, come back. I'll be perfectly fine on Wednesday. I don't have to be at an 8 o'clock class. And I think in football, too, they've got to really start balancing out the primetime thing versus, you know, couple night games a year are fine. But, boy, when it starts adding up, I'm not so sure everybody's all that crazy about 3 or 4 night games in a year at Beaver Stadium. Now, that's up to you. You ought to call me and let me know if how many night games a year you prefer Beaver Stadium. Maybe prefer 7. I don't know. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Hi, my name is Nathan Davis, head coach of the Bucknell University men's basketball team. I'm honored by your support of the Bison, and I'm proud to call the Susquehanna Valley home. Our community is built on a set of shared values. We care for our family, friends, and neighbors. We're kind to each other, and there is no room here for acts of hate. This is no place for racism, sexism, discrimination of any kind. We are stronger when we stand up together against these displays of intolerance. Everyone has a role to play, and I'm going to play mine. Will you play yours? The Valley, together, never alone.
Great message by a class act, Nathan Davis, head basketball coach at Bucknell, who joins us on tomorrow's show. Also, Ryan Snyder from Blue White Illustrated and Rivals.com scheduled for tomorrow as well. Thursday, Peter King of Sports Illustrated, who is, to me, a gold standard. He is a gold standard in the industry. Hall of Fame voter and author and someone who is every Monday is a must-read on Monday Morning Quarterback. So he will be on the show Thursday, since he doesn't have to write Monday Morning Quarterback. So we'll have him on Thursday. But he's awfully busy at this time of the year, and especially with the Hall vote coming up. There's some great names on there. And he's been a Hall voter for a long time. But we'll get into a lot of things with him. We'll get into him about the Patriots, about the Falcons, about the Hall of Fame, about the Chargers move from San Diego to Los Angeles, about the Raiders move to Las Vegas. It's a $13 billion industry that has moving parts. There's one aspect of the Charger move that is, you know, that I will say, and I mentioned that I've understood the financials of this for a long time. Remember, when Donald Sterling moved the Clippers to Los Angeles back in the 80s, and it took him a long time to get a toehold there, but what did he sell the team for? When he finally sold the team, he sold the team for $2 billion to Steve Ballmer. Steve Ballmer never would have bought the San Diego Clippers for $2 billion, because there wouldn't have been a bidding that would have ramped it up that high. Now, he may have bid $1 billion for it, or $1.2 billion, but it does tell you about the value of a team in Los Angeles. All right. Our thanks today to Donnie Collins, Scranton Times Tribune, and also to Matt Leon from KYW. Thanks to Jennifer Wakeman today, Sean Carey, and the Faceless Suit. Guess he wore black today for mourning.
I did too.
Well, I'll tell you, kind of miss those days at 3.9 yards a carry, huh?
Your home for the NFL playoffs and Super Bowl 51. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.